How does a broken bicycle valve stem keep one feeling creative and artistic? Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Krissa Hewitt, and Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program which my co-hosts Stephen DeLuque and I produce at the studios at KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. While Stephen is making some holiday cheer up in Portland with family and friends, I had the opportunity to have a conversation with Kevin Christian. Over the last couple of years, he has been taking classes with me at my home studio, but this he fits in around his day job, working for the city. We are talking today about how the different aspects of his life fit together and how important it is for him to be a maker, whether at home or at work. Here now is Kevin Christian. Good afternoon.
Hi, Krissa.
Thinking about the fact that a lot of people end up finding creative outlets in their life, but they're not necessarily their primary part of their job or maybe even their education. And you've kind of been in both places, I think, right? I mean, you did graphic design for quite a few years. Was that something you actually studied in school?
Yeah. Well, my background was that I wanted to be a graphic designer, and I went to school to study that, but I quickly found out that that really wasn't my best talent. I continued on in that field because I was actually very interested in printing, and I really enjoyed the whole process of making a product with the printing process. So I always felt that, you know, I was jack of all trades, but master of none. I could do a decent graphic design and put it up and print it. But somebody who's really a graphic designer can do a better design in about a third of the time.
But you were in that field?
Absolutely. I ended up on the print production side. I worked for Time Warner for 15 years. That was fascinating. And I did end up getting to work with designers, but I was not the designer. On very rare occasions, perhaps something that I did, you know, influenced their design. But for the most part, I was really more on the technical side of getting the print production done.
Is there a lot of problem solving in that?
The process was designed so that, you know, you would hopefully produce a product on a specific timeline because it was a weekly magazine and it had to get out the door. But, you know, technology being what it is, and certainly what it was at the time that I was doing it, there probably wasn't a week that went by that didn't have some sort of problem solving going along through it, you know, from the technical side. That's the nature of the beast. And it led to some interesting opportunities or fun challenges for me, because that's, to me, part of the creative process too, is problem solving. That's what creativity can be considered in many ways. For me, whether or not I end up creating what I originally had in mind or something else, it really is how I stumbled through each problem that led me to the end product.
I don't think you could have said that better. It's certainly been my observation that figuring out not just the technical how, but even the why of what I'm doing is the challenge that's always out there.
Right. Thinking back, you know, just like from a career standpoint, in, you know, making a product that somebody specifically wants, the challenge when you run into any kind of problems is that you have to solve the problems to still get the product, the person or the entity, whatever, what they want. What I really enjoy about personal creativity is that I'm the client. I'm the creator and I'm the client. So if I run into a stumbling block, I find this technical challenge, my solution may take me in a different direction than I originally thought I was going to go. And I'm the one who gets to decide if that's okay or not. You know, I can decide that I'm going to make this specific product, this specific design that I had in my head, or I can decide, well, let's see where this takes me. That's where I've found the most fun, because it's like there's discovery. And more often than not these days, I don't actually know what I'm really going to end up with. I just have a general idea. And I find that having that kind of loose sense really is freeing. It's tremendously freeing, actually. I think that in the past, when I was younger, I may have suffered a bit from the disease of perfectionism. And it can be tremendously limiting. Not that you shouldn't try to do things well, but that, you know, having a specific idea and having to stick to it is really narrow for me.
When you were growing up, were there a lot of creative things that you would find yourself doing?
My mother is a weaver, and she was a teacher as well. So she always had stuff around, you know, so nothing really sticks out, except that I know that I always had the opportunity to be making something. Just as I said earlier that, you know, maybe I'm jack of all trades and master of none, I don't think that I was a child that was particularly engrossed in creativity or, you know, projects that were like that all the time, but they were just there. I do recall once I became a kind of middle school age, I gravitated to every shop class that I possibly could take because I got to make things, and it didn't really matter whether I was working in wood shop or metal shop or whatever. It was just that I liked to make things.
I've been interested lately that the term maker, that I hear that now when I go to national conferences, and it really is not about the material. It is very much about the making. I think it's been coined to some degree to kind of step around the craft versus art dialogue. So found it kind of an interesting term, and certainly a very inclusive one, because, again, it isn't about material or even about specific process.
Yeah, I totally agree. I know that, you know, we have a maker space here in San Luis Obispo, which I have visited. And what's so neat about that, it doesn't matter the material. It's that you're making something. And with the technology that's evolved over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, there are ways that you can work with material that you couldn't do 20 years ago. The tools were not available. And the technology itself is also part of this maker kind of mindset. So people who, you know, are making things with their computer are also part of that maker movement, or people who are making small technology-based gadgets are part of it. So it's not the traditional, as you say, you know, the arts and crafts kind of thing. It's not just that. That's part of it. That's fine. But it's become larger, so that I think, you know, maybe that's where the term came from. People were trying to, you know, struggling with, you know, the confines of what somebody would say. Oh, yeah, I'm into crafts. I like to make crafts. Well, crafts doesn't apply to the program that you wrote with your computer and the gadget that you were able to make that did some fun little thing.
As you have been exploring different things in this studio and in your own workshop at home, how does that activity complement, detract, whatever, from what you do as a daily employee now with the city?
My creative urges are really like a form of therapy for me. They're just a way that I'm able to tune out everything else in life for a period of time and focus on this one problem. Like, you know, we were talking before about stumbling blocks. How do I make this? You know, what's the next step in my process? And find that just really relaxing. It allows me to stop thinking about what maybe needs to be done just, you know, around the house, or what's going on at work and that I need to get back to tomorrow, and allows me to really relax a lot more. Even if it's just, you know, something as simple as I've got to file the edge of this piece of metal down to make it fit. By focusing on that and the repetitive nature of that, and that at the end I know that I'm going to have this smooth edge that I really want, I've been able to tune everything else out. And I think that it's like a great byproduct of actually producing some wonderful little piece at the end of it.
I know you now through working with metal, and one of your other activities is that of a bicyclist. Jewelry and metalworking and the bicycling have overlapped. I've found that that's just really intriguing for me to watch those two interests come together. Want to describe some of what you've been doing?
Well, bicycling has been something that I've done ever since I was a teenager. To some people, I'm pretty overboard about it, but I believe in it as a great form of exercise, recreation, and it's a great way for me to get around this town. So I use it as my primary form of transportation to and from work. At some point, it became very natural, since I do like to work with metal, I had the opportunity to make my own bicycle frame. At the time, they were dominantly made out of steel. That's no longer the case, but that was great because I know how to work with steel. And that's been fun over the years, where I've actually made a few bike frames and, you know, using different techniques. And my bike is also, for me, a personal creative piece. It's a piece of art to me, and that it's this functional, wonderful thing that I can travel all around the county with is just a wonderful bonus. Instead of wearable art like jewelry, it's, you know, it's writable art.
You're listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio. My guest today is Kevin Christian, who is an avid bicyclist, an employee of the city, and an artist. We'll continue now as he talks about how he incorporates his bicycle world with his art world.
Along the way, you started collecting parts and broken parts.
Broken parts specifically. Both of my parents are Depression era babies, and I was brought up with this, you know, reuse, you know, recycle kind of mentality, and I've never gotten rid of it. So I have a hard time throwing away things that seem like maybe they could be usable, even though they're no longer usable for their original function. In the bicycling world, I've always seen some sort of bicycle-related jewelry art, and I've never been very satisfied by the designs that I see. They're just too obvious. Take your old piece of chain, put it on a earring hoop, and now you've got an earring. I've collected bits of broken parts, looking at them, trying to discern what I could do with them, manipulate them to make them into kind of an intriguing piece of jewelry that would really only be discernible as a bike part to somebody who's a total bike geek, that, and maybe not even that. It's challenging. It's very challenging.
In fact, you've had that experience.
You helped me produce this wonderful bracelet that really is, you know, been a great success using those parts. And I was eager to show it off and see who would understand what they were looking at. And what was fascinating was, in one group, there were bicycling people and there were some non-bicycling people. And it was actually somebody who was a non-bicycling person who figured out the part first. And so that was really funny, because the bicycling people, they started thinking about even more kind of esoteric parts that it could have been from some crazy old piece. And this is not obvious. It's a bike part, but it's not obvious.
So let the listeners in on what that was.
It was simply a valve stem from an inner tube. I cut it, I flattened it out, I manipulated it, and, you know, hooked it to something else. There's no context, I think, anymore to its original form. It's misleading. Perhaps that's why the person who was the non-bicyclist came up with the idea, because they weren't confined to the idea of what it originally was supposed to be.
Was that the first thing you tried to do with valve stems? What excited you when you started seeing them in a different shape?
I was very much limited by just the fact that it was a tube. I really can't tell you what my inspiration was for splitting the thing and then trying to flatten it out. I can tell you that flattening out a small tube is really difficult. It took me a few tries to figure out the technique of how to do it. And you have to, as you know, working with metal, you know, it's been work hardened already. It has to be annealed. I have to anneal it multiple times. It's so thin and it's got threads in it and that have been cut into it. So it'll crack very easily. It'll break if I try to hammer on it too much. So there were some, you know, technical challenges to get over. And then once I flattened it out and I thought, this is really cool. I really was intrigued by the form. It looks really neat now, but what am I going to do with it?
Going back to your earlier comment about the perfection side, my finding of the beauty of them is in their irregularity and the visibility of the thread lines, the cracks and the coloring and so forth. But I just didn't know if that was something that grew on you or if that was what Kevin likes best.
I think that I'd already, you know, when going down this road, there was no perfection that I was actually looking for because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But as you noted, the differences of the texture in from each one of them comes out uniquely, slightly different. The cracks are part of it. I absolutely came to accept that that's okay. That looks fine because it's going to be laid down next to another one that looks different. And that's part of the beauty. If they were all exactly the same thing, then there's no trace then that these had to be manipulated to become what they are.
I also know that you're looking at spokes and other parts. Obviously, there could be lots of parts that you've been collecting.
There's a lot of spokes and wheels, and it seems like that's, you know, to me, I just keep looking at them thinking there's got to be more opportunities. That's another one of those really kind of simple, you make a hoop out of it, and now you have a spoke bracelet. And that's nice. It's been done before, and it's pretty obvious. So I've been looking at the spokes, and I've got a couple ideas, one where I've used the bend in the spoke, what I hope to be kind of an interesting kind of adornment piece, the jewel in a piece of jewelry. It's going to be the highlight. The other bits that I've looked at a bunch and you've seen are actually part of the valve stem as well. They're not the stem. They're the actual part of the plunger that allows the valve to open or close. Those I have yet to actually incorporate, but it'll be soon. I think they're really cool looking. But yeah, I've been looking at those really, you know, those pieces that we have a lot of and, you know, how to make those not so obvious. What are we going to do with this that makes it unique, makes it interesting, makes it appealing, and it draws people in, whether they ride a bike or don't ride a bike, it has nothing to do with it. I hope that pieces that I make kind of spark people for whatever reason, just because it's interesting.
Absolutely. We've been talking about using these forms in jewelry scale. Are you also playing with them on sculptural forms or larger items?
You know, I haven't yet. I've thought about incorporating some spokes into actually a stone sculpture that I was stuck on for ages, and I haven't had the nerve to try to do it yet. But, you know, let me talk on that a little bit. I did a project years and years ago with a friend who is an amazing artist, and I was really into photography at the time, and so we did a joint show together. I did photography, and he did whatever he wanted to do. On a sculptural basis, he created a life-size bicycle rider using bicycle parts welded together. It was so heavy, he had to support the thing using an engine stand to create it. And he built it in a manner so that it looked like somebody was on their bike, kind of standing, sprinting. So there was all this great energy in it. Your question brings that up. I have thought of doing something like that. And then I thought, well, I don't have an engine stand. How am I going to actually do this? I definitely keep myself focused more on the jewelry scale because it's something that I can actually work with in the small amount of space that I have. That's really where I am right now.
I think we're very often, in one sense, restricted by the nature of equipment, by the nature of facilities, our own personal physical abilities to use a hammer or lift something or whatever. And it's sometimes because it's that stretch outside of the comfort zone.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I was taking a class once when I lived in New York, and there was a man who was almost 100% blind. He was legally blind, and it was fascinating to watch him work because he just hugged the stone. He literally had his hands and his arms around the stone almost all the time because that's how he saw it. He would work with his face 2 inches from the stone, then run his fingers and his forearms around the stone and then move back a little bit and pick up his chisel and do a little bit more work. He was very methodical, very slow, and he was working within his own limitations and creating an amazingly beautiful piece to perceive with my eyes, which is the way I saw it, but he couldn't see it at all. He could not see it the way I could see it. So it was just fascinating that he was able to do this work. Obviously, he was a very creative man, and I didn't get his backstory at all. I don't know when he started sculpting in stone, if he had done it for all his life, and this was, you know, what he could do now, or if he had come to it when he had the limitation. You know, just like technical hurdles in trying to create something. Yeah, we do. We have our own physical limitations or our own mental limitations, you know, that I don't know, can I do that? Can I push myself to try to learn that, to get past that, to do that? Am I willing to try it and probably fail before I succeed? It is a risk. How much of a risk do I want to take that, you know, this project is not going to work out? Will I feel fulfilled by this project if it doesn't work out? I absolutely struggle with that. I want to have something to show for it at the end. Maybe that's, you know, and that is a personal limitation. It is.
Absolutely. And sometimes I can feel adult enough to say maybe the experience was worth the time for whatever I learned from it, but it's much more rewarding if I can feel satisfied with something that got made. Also with metal, because it isn't a material that I can just roll up in a ball like clay and easily start over, I probably tend to be a little bit more directed and hoping that I'll get to where I want to go versus just, oh, let's try this. And I use other materials to do that instead of metal.
I had a thought of something that happened once to me. I was just experimenting with a technique. It was actually a blacksmithing thing. And so I was heating the metal up and I was pounding on it, trying to figure out how the metal was going to move. You know, I just used a piece of scrap that was in a bucket. And when I was done, I threw the piece of metal back in the scrap bucket. A few months later, we had a show. And lo and behold, somebody puts in a piece and it's got this piece of metal that I had hammered on and thrown back in the scrap. And it became a major feature in this person's piece. And I thought, well, there you go.
Is it too cliche to say that the work week, your life, family and friends, that the influences of what you're doing as you're making come into play?
How does my creativity play into my work when my work is not really a creative endeavor, I suppose? And you brought up at the beginning, you know, that I had some training in graphic design, and now I'm not working in that either. And but what's really cool is that since I'm not working in an environment as I used to with a bunch of graphic designers, I'm a much better graphic designer now in relative terms. But the great thing is there's opportunity there. So if I'm working on a report or some presentation, a spreadsheet even at work that is for myself, my group, one of my supervisors, to me, it matters the way it looks. It absolutely matters. Not just what the content is, but the way it looks matters. And so I know how to use the electronic tools and I'll make it look a little bit better. I did a little bit more. But to me, that's just part of the creation of that work piece. sometimes that's all I get, and I have to be really happy about it. And it's actually kind of interesting because there are other people like myself, and we've tuned into each other, and we'll say, hey, look what I did today. You know, just because you made that very kind of static report look a little bit better. And, you know, you kind of, you know, pat each other on the back and say, yep, I found a way to nurture my creativity a little bit today, and I'm happy.
I like to think that those details are a big part of what makes life exciting. Bottom line question is how you see this part of your life as part of the whole picture. And I think that you've elaborated on that, so you might just summarize it.
I absolutely respect and have an amazing amount of envy for these people who are born artists. I so wish that my drive would kick in that kind of degree, because as I said, I find that when I'm able to get my creative juices going and I allow myself the time to stop the rest of life and focus on those creative juices, it's so, so satisfying. It's like a drug. I want it all the time, but it just disappears and I don't have it all the time like those folks. So yeah, I have a lot of envy, maybe some jealousy. So there, that's just for them. Thank you very much. You've set the bar really high for me. That creative talent and drive that some people have from birth, it's still an amazingly strong thing. And I think that people are going to find it regardless of what technology distracts them or, you know, because we've all had distractions in life. I don't have a creative-driven job, but I find ways to nurture my own creativity to a degree that's acceptable in that job. And then I find time to the degree that I need outside of work and family and other interests to focus some of my time on that creative need and my own creative growth. Just like everything else in life, you're looking for that balance. What's going to make you happy? What's going to do what you need to get done? It's not static. It's never going to be, you know, what you need today is not necessarily what you need tomorrow. What you do today is not going to necessarily meet the needs of 2 years from now. So it's an interesting process. You know, there's my kind of summary. I think that we'll just each one of us continue along and be try to be happy in the moment of our creativity when we find it.
And the more we broaden the definition of creativity for ourselves, then the more moments we find. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Chris. Always a good time.
Could wish for a little bit of Bicycle Built for Two music at this point. But just hum along. You have been listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. My guest today has been Kevin Christian, who lives in San Luis Obispo, can be seen bicycling all over the county, works for the city, and still finds time to do creative objects with bicycle parts. Stephen DeLuque returns next week, and our guest will be Jim App Roberts of San Luis Obispo. Hope you will join us next week. This is Chrissy Hewitt, and for co-host Stephen DeLuque, want to wish you a wonderful 2016.